Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Jostin Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vinata Swami Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Kachari Monday Hum Shri Guru Shri Cha Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Vanshakalpa Trubhischa Kripa Sundabhyeva Cha Padijanam Pavanevya Vaishnavya Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 It's July 20th, 2015, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Text 6. This is a Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii.
Ita puna sweka idam nivesha. Shete guhayam sanivritta vritti.
Shete guhayam sanivritta vritti.
Yogeshvara dishvara eka etad.
Yogeshvara dishvara eka etad.
Anupravisto bahudayatasit.
Unmuted.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. He lies down on his own heart, spread in the form of the sky, and thus placing the whole creation in that space, he expands himself into many living entities, which are manifested as different species of life. He does not have to endeavor for his maintenance, because he is the master of all mystic powers and the proprietor of everything. Thus he is distinct from the living entities. Purport. The questions regarding creation, maintenance, and destruction, which are mentioned in many parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are in relation to different millenniums or kalpas, and therefore they are differently described by different authorities when questioned by different students. There is no difference regarding the creative principles and the Lord's control over them, yet there are some differences in the minute details because of different kalpas. The gigantic sky is the material body of the Lord, called the Virat Rupa, and all material creations are resting on the sky or the heart of the Lord. Therefore, beginning from the sky, the first material manifestation to the gross vision down to the earth, everything is called Brahman. Sarvam kalamidam Brahma. There is nothing but the Lord, and he is one without a second. The living entities are the superior energies, whereas matter is the inferior energy, and the combination of these energies brings about the manifestation of this material world, which is in the heart of the Lord. Yata puna sveka idam nivesya shete guhayam sa nivritta vritti. Yogeshvara Adishvara Eka Etad Anu Pravisto Bahuda Yatasit. He lies down on his own heart, spread in the form of the sky, and thus placing the whole creation in that space, he expands himself into many living entities, which are manifested as different species of life. He does not have to endeavor for his maintenance, because he is the master of all mystic powers and the proprietor of everything. Thus he is distinct from the living entities. So here, the space is called the heart of the Lord. And this is from the word Guhayam. Guhayam literally means secret. And it's a metaphor for heart, the secret place. Gopi Pranandana Prabhu told us once how the one metaphor used often in the scriptures for our heart, the heart of the living entities, is the secret cave. So every language has its idioms and its metaphors, which are not taken exactly literally. Whenever we go from one language to another, these idioms and metaphors are often confusing, right? We say, okay, we're going to go someplace. We say we're going to hit the road. That doesn't mean we're going to go out with sticks and beat the street. It means we're going to get in our cars or whatever and start moving. So actually one devotee was recently consulting with me. He was translating a Sanskrit verse and trying to translate it very literally. And the verse was talking about that if you say the name of the Lord, even in an offensive way, joking way, whatever, that you've tightened your belt, meaning that you've started your journey. So people used to take a journey by foot, and before you start walking, you tighten your sash, you tighten your belt so your clothes aren't going to fall down while you're walking. So this devotee who's from India, he said, should I translate that as rolling up your sleeves? And I said, no, because this verse is talking about a journey to spiritual perfection, and to start a job, you roll up your sleeves. But to start a journey, I said, you'd also tighten your belt. It's an appropriate metaphor also in the modern day. So here we have this idiom or metaphor about the secret place. The secret place meaning the heart. You could say the sky isn't exactly very secret. The sky or space is perhaps the most obvious and known and seen thing to everyone. But at the same time, it is a very secret place because it is the heart of the Lord. So what do we keep in a very secret place? Why is the heart used in this idiomatic form of the secret or the cave, what is hidden? Even in our modern day, when we talk about the self being equivalent with the brain, you know, the modern scientist who thinks that we're no more than a machine, and they think that everything that denotes us as a person is simply impulses of the brain. We still, in our common speech, and pretty much as far as I know, all languages, associate the feelings, the emotions, and the desires not with the brain, but with the heart. We talk particularly about love as happening with the heart, not with the brain. When two people are in love, they draw hearts. They don't draw pictures of brains. And of course, it is this emotion and desires which are the main symptoms of a living entity. A living entity is not distinguished simply by thought, because computers can think. But computers have no emotions or desires connected with those thoughts. And the emotions and desires are what denote us as a living being. And in fact, those are our most secret thing, isn't it? You know, we certainly have some thoughts that we would like to keep a secret, but mostly what our secrets are our feelings, our desires, our emotions. It's quite interesting in modern therapies, they've discovered that we don't really like to talk about our feelings, not women either. It's not just a male thing. That people in general don't like to talk about their feelings. We're not even very familiar with the names for our emotions. The other day, some friend of mine got caught up in a not palatable email exchange and wrote back to the person, "You're a bully." And I said, you know, it's not very good. You're dealing with a devotee to call them a bully. And the devotee I was talking to said, well, I'm just expressing my feelings. And I said, that's not a feeling. That's not a word denoting an emotion. So we don't like to reveal our emotions. Instead of revealing our emotions, we call other people names, or we say that we're talking rationally, but we try to hide our emotions. As soon as we reveal our emotions and desires, then we become very vulnerable because we are starting to reveal something of the self. And therefore we keep these things generally hidden in a cave. We don't generally reveal these things. We try not to. There are many cultures where people only express their emotions and desires when they're intoxicated, for example, or at some sporting event. These are very secret because they are connected with the self. They are the symptom of the self. So even for the Lord, his heart is here denoted as guhyam, very secret. So what do we keep in some place that's very secret and very hidden? We keep that which is very valuable. And I was thinking of Jesus' instructions on the mount, on the mountain, as described in the Bible book of Matthew, where he says, "Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moss and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal." So this is the kind of treasure that we should have in our heart, and it's the kind of treasure that the Lord has in his heart. What treasure does the Lord have in his heart?
Mataji, I'm sorry, but your voice dropped a little bit.
Okay, I don't know why. I'll move the mic closer. What treasures does the Lord have in his heart? So this he's explained in the Bhagavad Gita and also in the Bhagavatam. And especially he's explained this in the Bhagavatam in relation to the story of Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa. When Durvasa Muni is trying to kill Ambarish for a very slight offense, immediately the Lord Sudarshan Chakra starts chasing Durvasa Muni all over the universe. And Durvasa Muni, after trying unsuccessfully to take shelter of the various demigods, goes directly to the owner of the chakra, Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha, and asks for some relief. And the Lord says, "The sadhus are in my heart, and I am in their heart." He says, "I cannot excuse offense against a sadhu. You have to go directly to the sadhu." So frankly, not only are the sadhus in the heart of the Lord, but here it's explained that all the living entities, the whole material world, is in the heart of the Lord. That's pretty amazing, right? And Prabhupada says in this last sentence, "The combination of these energies, that's us, the jivas, and matter, bring about the manifestation of this material world, which is in the heart of the Lord." That's pretty amazing. We can understand why the sadhus would be in the heart of the Lord, but why the whole material world is in the heart of the Lord in a very secret place as a great treasure. And this is, of course, because the Lord has affection for all living entities and affection for his creation, just like we do. We also have affection for our creation, both matter and spirit. We have affection for our creation in the form of our children, which are our living entities, but we also have affection for the things we create out of matter. You know, I've been an editor for Back to Godhead since 1990, and people write articles that they want to get published. If we say that the article's not suitable for publication, they become very angry. Or even if we ask them to change one sentence. I had an experience where a devotee submitted an article and we said, "This is a wonderful article. Can you please change three sentences?" And we didn't hear back from him for months. And at one point I saw him, I said, "Prabhu, why haven't you resubmitted your article?" And he said, "Well, you didn't like it." I said, "We loved it. We just wanted three sentences changed." And he said, "Well, I can't do it." People feel this attachment to their creations. Even what's made of matter, even just words on a computer screen or words on a piece of paper, you know, it's like they're babies. And these things they hold in their heart. So Krishna's holding us in his heart. He's even holding the material world in his heart as something very dear to him, as a great treasure. And of course, we are also holding the Lord in our heart. He is really our greatest treasure. He is the super soul. He is the self of the self. But rather than going for the treasure that is in our heart and the person who's holding us in his heart, we're looking for happiness in other ways. So this is very foolish. There's been stories since the beginning of time of someone who doesn't realize who really loves them and goes searching for someone else. Right? This is the idea of the why we find it so abominable when someone has an adulterous affair. Because we're saying, wait a minute, here's the person who really loves you, who's taking care of you, who's giving everything to you. And instead of acknowledging that and loving them in return, you're loving someone who's giving you nothing. Right? This was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's criticism of the scholar who said that his commentary surpassed that of Sridhar Swami. He said, a woman who thinks that she's beyond her Swami, she is simply an unchaste woman. She's an adulteress. So the person who's maintaining you, who loves you, instead of loving them in return, if you love someone who's giving you nothing, that's foolish. And not only is it foolish, it's, at least it used to be, criminal. So in a similar way, we have the Lord as the greatest treasure in our heart, and he has us and even this world as the greatest treasure in his heart, and yet we go seeking for things in an illusion instead. So why don't we look a little bit with the details of this verse at what treasure we have, what is within our secret place, what have we kept up in a safe with a combination lock for safekeeping that we're not aware of. I bring up before how Mahaprabhu talks about how we all have this treasure in our backyard, we just don't know where it is, we don't know where to search for it. But here we're being told where to search for it, but what is it? So one aspect of the Lord who's in our heart, who's our greatest treasure, is endless variety. So Srila Prabhupada notes that in the beginning of this purport, where he says, the questions regarding creation, because this verse, although Srila Prabhupada didn't translate it in the form of a question, it's still part of Vidura's questions to Maitreya. So Prabhupada is saying here that the details of creation are a little different with each creation. And most likely Srila Prabhupada is referencing the commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, because Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, the question about creation is asked repetitively to find that if the creation takes place the same way in each Mahakalpa or not. So the fact is that it doesn't. I might have mentioned before, Tamal Krishnamurti, Sataputta Prabhu, and some other devotees wanted to write a book about creation referencing the Bhagavatam. Of course, Rasamandala Prabhu in London has written a book about the creation, and we wrote an article about it in the Back to Godhead. But it was really an almost impossible job, because Tamal Krishnamurti and Sataputta Prabhu were noting, I think there were some other scientists involved as well, they were noting that the creation is described differently in different parts of the Bhagavatam, also in different shastras among the Vedic canon, and these different versions could not be reconciled with each other. They were irreconcilable. You just couldn't understand, well, wait a minute, is it happening like this or is it happening like that? And here it's described by Srila Prabhupada, by our acharyas, that one reason it's so difficult to understand is that it doesn't always happen the same way. And different descriptions are given of different creations. That on the whole, it's the same. Everything's coming from sound. From sound comes sky or ether, the K, which is described here. Sometimes it's, the Sanskrit word is used, kam, kam, mano, buddha, avarcha. But everything comes from sound, which then produces the modes of material nature, which then produces the great elements, the subtle elements, and the gross elements. But exactly how it happens and how the Lord does it is going to be a little different every time. I mean, we're like that too. You know, if I go to cook something, the other day I was helping my granddaughter make something we call fancy biscuits. It's where you roll out biscuit dough very thin, and you put in a filling made of cheese and other stuff, and then you wrap the biscuit dough over the filling. So you can make it sweet. When I first learned how to make it, I made it sweet. You make it with like fruit jam and cream cheese. And then you can also make it salty. And I found that there's almost endless variety of fillings you can put in. I mean, we didn't have that much cheese this time, so I cooked up some eggplants and mashed them up and, you know, substituted that for the cheese. And every time I make it, it's a little different. So it's basically the same preparation. I mean, essentially it's the same, but sometimes it's sweet, sometimes it's salty. Sometimes you do this with samosas, too. You can get sweet samosas, you can get salty samosas. You can have a variety of sweet fillings, a variety of salty fillings. You can deep fry them. You can bake them. And though essentially it's the same thing, it's some kind of a pastry dough that's wrapped around some sort of a filling that has moisture, moist filling, that it's a very different preparation each time, although it's really the same preparation. So we also like variety. Right? Bhaktivedanta Manor, they make an endless variety of sandesh and burfi, all different flavors, all different shapes, all different colors. I mean, it's just amazing what you can do, although essentially it's the same preparation. So the Lord has endless variety, and we're very attracted to endless variety. People don't like, what do they say, same old, same old. We don't like just the same thing over and over again. We want variety. We want variety in our food. We want variety in our environment. We want variety in our experiences. Prabhupada says, variety is the mother of enjoyment. You know, we think it very unfortunate that people have to eat exactly the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day, and so forth and so on. And we're always looking for something new. We're always looking for something new. I remember one time going to a lecture that one devotee was giving, and he was telling all these pastimes of Krishna I'd never heard before. And I asked him during the class, where are these from? And he was avoiding my question in many artful ways. And afterwards, I talked to him, and I said, Maharaj, well, you know, I've never heard these stories. Where are they from? And he said, oh, every year I go around Vrindavan and collect new stories from the villagers. And he looked at me and he said, people always want to hear something new. Hare Krishna. I don't think that's quite the way to go about it. But Krishna is a person of endless variety. Although his pastimes are repeating, they are always repeating in a somewhat different way, with somewhat different flavors, and they're always new. And we have Yogeshwara, Yoga Ishwara, Yogeshwara, that he's the master of all mystic potencies. So we're also interested in someone who can do something amazing, right? Someone who can do some amazing magical tricks. I mean, even someone who does some amazing card tricks. We're fascinated, or has a, you know, the standard magician's trick where they wave a handkerchief and it becomes a bird, or, you know, taking a rabbit out of a hat. You know, the hat's empty and then a rabbit comes out of the hat. And how do they do that? Where could they fit the rabbit? You know, a rabbit's a big creature. How can you fit the rabbit in the bottom of a hat? You know, where do you fit the bird? You have your hand, and then there's a bird, and they you know, I saw a magic act once where there was a woman inside of a cage that was elevated off the stage, and there was nothing behind it, there was nothing underneath it, and they put a cloth over the stage, and when they pulled the cloth off, there was a tiger inside the stage, and the woman walked onto the stage from the side, or, you know, cutting a woman, and why it's always a woman. Cutting a woman in half, you know, and then she's whole again. And we're fascinated by these things. Or people who do amazing acrobatics, right? It's bending their body in all sorts of amazing ways, or who can sing beautifully. I mean, anyone who can do something extraordinary. You know, someone sent me a video the other day, which I didn't watch more than a couple minutes of it, but about this man who has yogic powers. And he's able to walk up. He walked up Mount Everest wearing only a bathing suit, you know, with no oxygen equipment and without anything for the cold. And he's able to swim underwater in ice without changing his core body temperature. And people are fascinated by this. But Krishna is the master of all mystic powers. So mystic powers beyond comprehension when Narada Muni told the cobbler that Narayan was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle, and the cobbler said, well, why not? He's putting a banyan tree inside of a seed. Why can't he put an elephant in the eye of a needle? I met somebody one time who said that he changed from atheism to theism when his child was born, and he thought, this is a miracle. This is an absolute miracle. I mean, how is it that a human being can form out of a little egg? You know, in 9 months, you have the body of a human with eyes and brain and heart and liver. And you start off with one undifferentiated cell from the man and the woman. And how does it differentiate into heart and lungs and small intestines and large intestines and skin and fingernails and eyes and brain? And unbelievable miracle. And the whole material world with its planets and, you know, we're so fascinated by a rabbit out of a hat. But what mystic power the Lord does. And here it's put together. We have Yogeshwara and Adishwara, the proprietor of everything. Adi here, this is not A-D-I. This is A-D-H-I, Adi. Adi means more, bigger, beyond. So he's the controller beyond. He's the master of all mystic powers, and he's the controller beyond all controllers, Ishwar Parama Krishna. Beyond everything. Ekala Ishwar Krishna. Everyone else is Vritta. Everyone else is a servant. So he's the supreme master. What a wonderful treasure to have in our heart. Right? We'd all love to be friends with some powerful person, someone who has ability to change things, right? People try to become powerful themselves, and they also try to make friends with the powerful. You know, if I can't get the power myself, let me make friends with the powerful. But we already have the most powerful, the supreme powerful, as our dear friend in the heart. And he's free of working for maintenance, which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains as meaning that he's beyond illusion. So we have Nivritta Vritti. So this is very common in the Shastra. Krishna's this and not this. So Vritta, Vritti is the same basic word. Activity. Vritti is activity. Your Vritti is usually translated as your maintenance. What you're doing to maintain yourselves, what your job is. Sometimes it's translated as your good conduct, your duty. So he gets his activities and his good conduct without doing any activities. He doesn't require to do anything in order to do everything. It just happens. Why? Because he's Yogeshwara Adishwara. Because he's the controller of everything and the controller of all mystic powers. Therefore, he can do everything without doing anything. He maintains himself by himself. When Krishna was arguing with Rukmini, and he said, actually, I don't own anything. It's a fact. I'm penniless. I don't own anything. And she said, you don't own anything because you are everything. So therefore, you can say you don't own anything. And everything comes to him automatically. You know, we have, this happens even to minor yogis. Kardama Muni just desired an aerial city for his wife. And there it was, and he was astonished, like, wow, how did I do that? And Krishna also is described in the 10th canto. He looks at Vraja and says, wow, this is really nice, my energies. Even Prabhupada says Krishna feels that way about the material world. And therefore, Prabhupada says that we should appreciate the material world or Krishna will become depressed, like that author became depressed when we told him to change three sentences. You know, what's not nice is our desire, our illusory desire to be the masters of this world. That's ugly and evil. But the world itself is not ugly and evil. The world itself is a wonderful creation of the Lord. So these things are without effort, right? Without effort so much that it's described here that he's lying down, sete. He's just lying down. That the material world, as we explained the other day, is the dream of the Lord. It's created in his sleep. So far I haven't created anything in my sleep. Of course, we use that as an expression in English. You know, well, I'm so good at that, I could do it in my sleep. I know that so well. I could explain it in my sleep. That's an idiomatic expression. But here the Lord actually does create in his sleep the whole material world. One person, the Yogeshwara Adishwara, he creates everything in his sleep. And if we think about how much work it takes a group of scientists to create one satellite, you know, how many years they have to study and how much money has to be spent on their equipment and how much they have to work. What did Edison say? That creating invention is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration, right? There's so much work and so much endeavor. But Krishna doesn't have to make any endeavor. He just goes to sleep. And while he's sleeping and dreaming the material world, he's having unlimited pastimes in his original form. Right? So not only done in his sleep, but while he's doing other things. You know, we talk about multitasking, and the neurologists say, well, you're not really multitasking. You're just switching very fast from one thing to another. But Krishna's factually multitasking. So he's just at ease. He's just relaxed. He's just lying down without any working. And everything he creates is spiritual. So Prabhupada refers to this. We have the etad, that he's one without a second, but bahuda, by innumerable. So here Srila Prabhupada is explaining that he expands himself into many living entities, which are manifest as different species of life. And then he says, thus he is distinct from the living entities. So this is, of course, fascinating. This is the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. And Prabhupada is referring here in the purport that everything is called Brahman, sarvam kalam idam Brahma. That because everything is expanded from him, everything is spiritual. And everything, in one very real sense, is him. It's not that it's just sort of kind of him. It really is him. You know, it really is him. We are his separated vibhinamsa expansions, but we are considered one of the expansions or one of the incarnations of the Lord. And it's explained very nicely in many places how the Lord would not be complete if he only had expansions that were infinite. The Lord is complete because he has both finite and infinite expansions, that he has both the energy of reality and the energy of illusion. And in fact, he has even varieties of all of those. So within the energy of illusion, there's, practically speaking, an infinite kinds of illusion depending on how the modes of material nature are interacting. And among the species, 8,400,000 species, but within the species, there's also each individual has infinite variety. So one of the varieties of Krishna's expansions is the finite living entities, or you and I. So in one very real sense, we are also God. He is also us, and we are also him. If that wasn't a fact, we really couldn't have a relationship with him. One can't have a relationship with something that is of a totally different nature than oneself. There has to be some kind of compatibility. There has to be some overlapping, right? I can have some degree of conversation with a person who speaks an entirely incomprehensible language. Just like if someone is speaking Chinese, Chinese doesn't come from the same language family as English. And if someone's speaking Chinese, there's not one word of it that's intelligible to me, nor is one word of my speaking intelligible to them. And I've had this direct experience when I was in China. There's no common ground. I mean, if I'm listening to someone speak Spanish or Italian or French, any of those, what they call the Romance languages from Latin, because so many of the English words are also Latin-derived, so I can understand something of what they're saying, even though they're speaking a different language. There's some area of commonality. Or because I've been hearing Sanskrit for so long, and Hindi and Bengali come from Sanskrit. If one is listening to Hindi or Bengali, one will have some areas of commonality if one knows Sanskrit. But without some area of commonality, a communication is really impossible. It can't take place. You have to find something in common. So we have our relationship with Krishna because in one sense we are fully him. And We are there. In one sense, there is no difference whatsoever between us and the Lord, which is one reason why our relationship with Him can be so deep and so satisfying, and one reason why He's really the treasure in our heart. In fact, that's the kind of relationship we're looking for. We're looking for someone who's totally us, and yet, distinct from us. We want someone who's us enough so that we can finish each other's sentences, so we know what each other wants without even starting a sentence, that we can communicate practically, telepathically. Right? At the same time, we want surprises. We want the other person to be able to surprise us. We want the other person to be able to be somewhat of a mystery, of a secret. Again, we have this guyam, that there's something secret and mysterious about the other that's not known to us. So we want this impossible combination in our relationship, someone who's fully us and we're fully them, that we're so united, that we're so one, that there's no conflict between us, that there's no irritation between us, that we're fully in sync with each other. And at the same time, we want someone who's mysterious and who's surprising, who's unknown, who we can never fully know, where we always have new, wonderful, and delicious things to find out about them, and they have new, wonderful, and delicious, and tasty things to find out about us. So this is the relationship we have with Krishna, that Sarva Kalamidam Brahman, everything is spiritual and everything is Krishna. Krishna and his energies are non-different, and therefore we are non-different from him. And at the same time, we are distinct, because we cannot say that we are Yogeshwara, or what to speak of Adishwara. We are not separate from Krishna. We are not the controller of anything. In fact, as soon as we have this illusion of being separate from Krishna, we find that we are immediately useless. That as soon as we're separate from Krishna, we cannot do anything as soon as we have this illusion. But Krishna's not like that. Krishna is fully functional. Even if we have this illusion of separateness, he's not affected. So the illusion of separateness affects me, but it doesn't affect Krishna. So therefore, there is a kind of difference between us. In one sense, when a living entity is fully in harmony with Krishna, that living entity can act with the power of Krishna. We find this where Priyavrata was acting as a second son, or Krishna was infusing Arjuna with his power on the battle of Kurukshetra. But when Krishna stopped infusing Arjuna with his power, then he couldn't even string his bow. So this is the oneness and difference. So what a treasure we have. We have this treasure already. We don't need to get it from anywhere. You know, sometimes we talk about sometimes it's said in the Shastra that the guru, the sadhu, plants the seed of bhakti in the heart. On the other hand, if we take that literally, that would mean that it's something we don't already have. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says very clearly that we already have it. We already have it. So when we're talking about planting a seed, it's a seed that's already there within us. It's not exactly a seed that one gets from the guru or the sadhu. It's a seed that we already have, that the guru and the sadhu awakens within us and plants within us. When you plant a seed, you awaken the seed. You bring it to life, right? There are some seeds that can go for thousands of years and still be viable. I know chickpeas are like that. They found, archaeologists have found chickpeas in Egypt that were there for like 10,000 years, and they planted them and they came to life. So Krishna is in our heart. Love for Krishna is in our heart. Bhakti is in our heart already. These are all our treasures in our secret place. And by the Shastra, by the holy name, by the sadhu, by the guru, that seed becomes awakened. It becomes planted. And it can start to grow. And we can start to realize that relationship with Krishna. And we can start to realize, why am I searching for treasures that simply can be destroyed in time? Why am I looking for temporary, superficial things that don't really give me happiness, when I already have this greatest treasure in my heart? And not only do I already have this greatest treasure in my heart, but I am in his heart. He takes me as the greatest treasure, and he's keeping me in the secret place, in his heart, and he's just simply waiting for me to awaken to the fact that not only is he most dear to me, but I am most dear to him. So if we have any questions or comments, Srila Prabhupada, can you join? Okay, so Sunil says, is it okay for devotees to enjoy natural beauty like flowers, sunrise, or is this considered to be material enjoyment? Well, that depends, and this is a question about anything. Why natural beauty? Anything. Is it material enjoyment when you eat a mango? It's not just a question of whether or not you've offered it to Krishna. I mean, if it's offered to Krishna and you still enjoy it just as sense gratification, that's really agyata sukriti. It's not really bhakti. At least if it's already offered to Krishna, you get some sukriti from it. But all of our enjoyment should be with jnana, with knowledge. You know, the other day, the screens in my windows, they had gotten very dirty. They had been installed, I guess, about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, and they had never been cleaned. So Govinda Mohini vacuumed them, but some of them were so dirty they needed to be cleaned more than that. And one of the screens was coming out of the frame. So my son took down the screen that was coming out of the frame. He fixed the screen, and then we hosed it down and cleaned it off. So I said to my daughter-in-law, I got my screens cleaned. And she said, yeah, Govinda Mohini told me that, and my husband told me that. And I was thinking, why did they tell her that? Because they wanted some appreciation. Right? They wanted to say, look what I did. I cleaned the screens. I did something wonderful. So are we appreciating the sunrise, or are we appreciating Krishna? That's the question. You know, if someone cleans the screens in your windows, you don't want them just to come and say, oh, nice screens. You want them to appreciate you. What to speak of if you're trying to take the enjoyment and steal it for yourself. Now, so if somebody cooks you a nice meal and you kind of sneak in and take some of it and run off to your room and eat it by yourself, that's not very pleasing. You know, why, when someone gives us a gift, they want us to enjoy our relationship with them. Yes, they want us to enjoy the gift. Yes, Krishna wants us to be happy even in this world. He says that in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. But he wants us to be happy in this world through sacrifice, through offering everything back to the Supreme, and through an appreciation of love. So on the platform of Karma Kanda, you're allowed to enjoy this world because you offer everything in sacrifice to the demigods or to God. You take what they've given you and you offer it back in sacrifice. You offer a palm full of water of the Ganga back to the Ganga. You offer your food to the devas or to God. But on a higher level than that, one should be offering back in love. And one should be enjoying in love. It should be a loving exchange. The six loving exchanges. And that's bhakti. But to enjoy it separately from Krishna is stealing. To enjoy it after you've offered some sacrifice to Krishna is pious. To enjoy it as an exchange of love, or actually what you're enjoying is the relationship with Krishna, that is bhakti. But bhakti does not mean that you stop enjoying. Otherwise, why would we do bhakti? Why would we do bhakti? I mean, if the people in the mode of ignorance are enjoying by stealing, and the people in passion are enjoying by sacrifice, and the people in goodness are enjoying in a different mood of sacrifice, and then we say in bhakti you don't enjoy at all, why do bhakti? No, in bhakti you enjoy better. And in bhakti, all the other lower forms of enjoyment are included. So if I'm enjoying the sunrise as Krishna's artistry, as an exchange of love with Krishna, and it brings me closer to Krishna and meditation on Krishna, then certainly the enjoyment of a beautiful thing hitting the retina of my eye and going through the optic nerve is also included. it's not particularly important because the other enjoyment is so much greater, but it's certainly included. You know, if someone you love cooks a wonderful meal for you, and you're eating that meal with them and you're enjoying the time with them, the taste sensation of the food on your tongue and the feeling of fullness in your belly is also included. But that's not the main enjoyment you're getting from this wonderful dinner with somebody that you love. Is that all right?
I'm almost thinking that you were speaking of Krishna as Yogeshwar, and you were talking about the magician who, from his hat, he pulls out a rabbit. How amazing that is! Somehow, I was thinking that, well, at least for us, for me, the greatest display of Krishna's magic is his holy name. That somehow he's been able to compact with his name, Nam Namakari Bahudan Nijasarva Shaktis. All of his potencies are contained within the holy name. There's that beautiful verse, can fulfill, just in his name, it can fulfill all of our spiritual desires. In Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, that all of the unlimited pastimes of Krishna, which Sheshanag, with his unlimited hoods since forever, he's been chanting and chanting and glorifying the different pastimes of Krishna, never ever reaching the end. They're all compacted within Krishna's name, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha and Purna Shuddha Nityamukta. It's so complete that everything of Krishna is compacted within that name. In Binatam Namanamino, that the name is non-different from Krishna. And Krishna's given that to us. So when we're chanting Krishna's name, everything is so, it's the greatest magic of all.
That is really beautiful. Actually, I was just hearing Prabhupada say this morning that if you chant the name with offenses, you will get material things. If you chant in the clearing stage, you get liberation. And if you chant purely, you immediately get love of God. So even material things, even to someone who chants with offenses, are there in the name. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your wonderful class.
Anybody else?
Yes, I have a question about the rabbit out of the hat.
Another rabbit out of the hat question.
Yes, because when there's descriptions about the virat, or, you know, things that are beyond our comprehension, you know, that things about the spiritual world, the different energies like that, I personally really would like to understand, not that I think that I have the capacity, but just I would like to, like, really get into it. And many times I've seen, like, devotees discourage me, you know, why are you even thinking about that? You can't understand it. Just, you know, read it and just move on. So as far as curiosity, is curiosity, whether material or spiritual, necessarily maya? Because, you know, okay, fine, we don't have the capacity to understand everything like Krishna. I understand that, but to even think, you know, to endeavor to understand it, you know, many times several devotees have told me that's really maya.
That's really funny, because if that curiosity to understand wasn't there, we wouldn't have Shastra. I don't know why people think, you know, it's really impersonal. People think bhakti means there's no enjoyment, bhakti means there's no curiosity. I mean, what do people want to do? Kill us? This is like merging in the Brahman, you know? In the Brahman, there's no curiosity. But in Goloka Vrindavan, there's lots and lots of curiosity. The residents of Vrindavan are always wondering what Krishna's up to and what the devotees are up to and what's happening, and they're constantly curious. And, I mean, think about the cowherd boys going into Agasura. They were pretty curious. I got an email recently from somebody who was really meditating on that Leela and wondering what it felt like for the cowherd boys to walk on Agasura's tongue, and you know, how long the tongue was and they must have been walking on the tongue for a long time, and it was slippery, and it was, you know, alive, and there was this stinky breath, and he was really curious like that. And this curiosity about the material world in terms of Krishna, in relationship to Krishna, is a huge part of the Bhagavatam. I mean, it's a huge part of the second canto, here the third canto, the fifth canto, the way the creation, it's even to there to some extent, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks about this to some extent to Sanatan Goswami. You have to think about also that Maharaj Parikit, he's going to die in 7 days. And I bring this up sometimes, how, you know, if I was going to die in 7 days, would I really listen to a description of the universal form? Would I be listening to a description of the orbits of Mercury and Venus? I mean, or would I just say, well, read to me from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam about the Vrindavan and Krishna with the gopis and the cowherd boys, etc. And yet, this is what Maharaj Parikit is listening to. And this is what Vidura is asking about. Such an important thing, and he's asking about this. He's not only asking. This is something that a point that Srila Prabhupada makes over and over and over again. One of the demarcations of the Sahajiyas is that they say, well, we're only going to listen to the 5 chapters about Rasalila. We're not going to study philosophy. We're not going to study any books. And, you know, we don't even want to hear about Rukmini. And this is just one of the signs. Sometimes devotees worry about becoming a Sahajiya. It's one of the signs of being a Sahajiya. Whereas the real devotee, the genuine devotee, they're curious about everything that has to do with Krishna. And no, we're never going to understand. Even Krishna doesn't understand everything about himself. So what? That, as I was saying, we want a relationship with someone where there's still some mystery and there's still some discovery. And the fact that there is unlimited mystery and discovery about Krishna is one of the things that makes him very attractive. We don't want to come to a point where we can say, now I've understood everything about Krishna. Krishna even can't say that about himself. And then that would be boring. Then we'd say, okay, done with that. I mean, I was a teacher for 27 years, and one of the reasons that I resigned from the classroom is that it started to become boring. It was like, okay, you know, there's not that much more to discover about this. I mean, I'm sure there is, but it got to the point that there wasn't that much of interest anymore. So if Krishna is all attractive, there must always be something more of interest to discover about him, and always some kind of mystery. And so that we not only do we want to keep that alive, but we want it to grow more and more and more. Our sense of curiosity and wonder, and let me learn more about Krishna, and more about Krishna, and more about Krishna. And not just what Krishna's doing in the groves of Vrindavan with Radharani, and not just, you know, what games he's playing with the cowherd boys, or how he's putting Mother Yashoda into anxiety, but also how the movements of the planets, for God's sake. That's in the fifth canto. That must have been like day 4 of Maharaj Parikit, day 3 or 4. And he's reading about the orbits of the planets. Why? Because he's curious. It has something to do with Krishna. So we're not impersonalists. We're not interested in killing. We don't want to kill our emotions. We don't want to kill our desires. We don't want to kill our curiosity. We don't want to kill our enjoyment. We just want to reconnect it with Krishna. That's the point. That's the point, to reconnect it with Krishna. Have it be about Krishna and not have it be separate from Krishna. We're not trying to kill something.
Wonderful, thank you. However, myself, I've kind of got a split personality, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, so that's nice to hear, but then there's another side to me that's interested in, like, you know, pyramids, you know, what the pyramids were all about, you know, Bermuda Triangle, all that kind of stuff. Now, that is not connected with Krishna. So,
well, that's up to you. Everything's connected with Krishna. That's up to you. Now, at our stage in Krishna consciousness, there are certain topics or activities which are so difficult to connect to Krishna that it's best that we avoid them. But everything's connected with Krishna. You know, Sariputta Prabhu wrote, I mean, it was controversial, but he wrote his book Alien Identities, for example. And he was working on a book, which unfortunately he passed away, it wasn't published, but he was working on a book showing how the Vedic culture was worldwide, and he was looking at a lot of these sorts of things. So it depends. You know, what is your area of service? Can you connect something with Krishna? I mean, I've even had the experience directly working with devotees on some service for Prabhupada's mission that for me as an individual, I found difficult to be Krishna conscious in that particular service. So I found that certain people and certain services tended to bring out negative things in me and tended to be bad for me. That doesn't mean that the service itself was bad. I mean, we could even give the example, like Rupa Goswami says that everyone should live at Radhakund. You know, what foolish person would not live at Radhakund? But that doesn't mean that living at Radhakund is going to be beneficial for all of our Krishna consciousness right now. If I went to live at Radhakund right now, I mean, I had a friend of mine who lives already in Vrindavan, and she was spending a few months every year living at Radhakund. And at a certain point, she concluded that it wasn't good for her, that it was better to stay in Vrindavan around the ISKCON devotees and et cetera, that it wasn't good to isolate herself. So even something like that, even the very best thing, cannot be the right thing for me. You know, taking sannyas is a wonderful service. And for some devotees, it will help them think of Krishna. For other devotees, it's going to spiral them into sinful life. So that's to speak of spiritual things, what to speak of other things. So one has to use some intelligence and some guidance. Everything is connected with Krishna. Everything. Sarva kalamidam brahma. But am I able to connect this with Krishna or not? And am I able to connect it with Krishna at this time in my life? Maybe I can't connect it with Krishna now, maybe I can later. Or maybe I could connect it with Krishna when I was younger and now I can't anymore. It's just like being a grihastha is favorable when you're 25, but it's not favorable when you're 75. So what's favorable at one time is not favorable another time. And for this, one needs to be introspective and one needs to take advice and guidance from senior Vaishnavas, from guru, if at all possible. But there's nothing intrinsically that is disconnected from Krishna. Everything is connected with Krishna. There's nothing that's intrinsically illusion other than illusion. And even illusion is Krishna's energy, by the way.
Mataji, do you have time to take Sunil's question?
Sure. Is that in the chat box?
Yeah, just go all the way down to the bottom.
Okay. If one has committed an offense against a person years back, against devotee or non-devotee, should one approach the offended person or the Lord or both? It's always best if you approach the person that you offended. This is sort of off the topic of the class. And Prabhupada said we should try to ask questions within the topic of the class or else the questions can be unlimited. But to answer you very briefly, it's always best if you can approach that person directly. That's always the best thing to do. If you approach that person and they're still not satisfied, then you should, and Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, you should try to serve them in some way. If they're still not satisfied, then you just take shelter of the holy name. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Jai.